He got his juices back.
And you know what else? Kenneth Michael Cole is in the building, man.
Kenneth Michael Cole.
Let me give Mr. Cole a... Oh, man. So, Mike, listen, what I want you to do is I want you to introduce yourself, and I want you to tell everybody your title and the things that you do at the job. But then we're going to give a backstory on why we call you Kenneth Michael Cole.
Mm-hmm.
Sir.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. I'm Michael Cole. I'm the Director of Community Services for Columbia County. And I have a green tie on. I wore it just for the radio. that's probably the oldest joke in town. But I'm here today to just promote mental health. May is Mental Health Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
And I just tell you a little bit about our clinic services and introduce you to Annabelle Adams, who is our certified peer specialist who works with our clinic. And I just was here a year ago, and I had so much fun. I needed to come back, and it's part of my therapy.
Oh, yeah.
Like stuff like
I like that.
Hey.
All right. So listen. We're gonna quickly. Me and Slay.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was Laura.
Yeah, Laura.
Go ahead.
Laura introduced us to Michael. She brought him in, and when he came in, I think, Vern, you kept getting his name wrong.
You kept calling him
Kenneth, the designer.
The designer.
And he never corrected it. He just went along with it. So then I think finally, I forget, it was like, no, his name's Michael. But, yeah, we definitely, you know, we had a great show, show. And it's weird because we actually got a lot of requests to talk about this and to have you back and to have Laura back. And then for some strange reason, you reached out. So
No, but you forgot one part. Remember we went to the suicide walk?
Yeah.
And we're walking. Me and Slay is walking.
Yeah, I forgot about this. Yeah.
We're walking, and we start walking up Warren Street because this year it was in Hudson. Every mm-hmm. year the walk changes from Hudson to Catskill.
Yeah.
So it was in Hudson, and we start walking up the street, and we're on Warren Street, and we're like, oh, snap, I know him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're both saying, and then I go, oh, yeah, that's Kenneth Cole.
And then we go up to him, and he's looking at us like, who are you guys? And then we start laughing. He was like, oh, you guys are the radio guys.
Yeah, so we had a great conversation during the walk. And the walk is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Slay said, Laura will be here next week. She'll talk about the walk. But the walk was a great thing. And Michael did say to us, he said, listen, when I'm ready to come back on, I'm going to reach out to you guys.
Yeah.
And he kept his word.
We appreciate it.
And he said, I'm going to bring somebody else with me. And we was like, hey, that's what it's all about, networking. Mm-hmm. And we're glad. And Annabella or Annabelle? Because I change names
all
the time.
You can also call me whatever you want. Oh, it's not my name. I'm not going to correct you.
Listen,
so
you can't.
I'll be Annabella from this point on.
It's making it too easy for
I
me.
I know, you got a really cool accent, too. Hey, Sofia Vergara or something.
All right, so you guys want to get down to business? Slay, you want to start it off?
Yeah, if you want to just state, tell us a little bit about why May is Mental Health, you know, Awareness Month and things like that.
I have no idea why May is Mental Health Awareness Month.
He stumped him on the first question.
You did this to me last time. You posed a question that I had to get back to you on, and it's taken me a year. I could speculate, but we have a condition, a brain disease, that is very common amongst us, all of us. And we have a trouble talking about it, whether it's depression, anxiety,
mm-hmm.
Bipolar, psychotic symptoms. This is really common. It's treatable, and there are services available locally. And we just have to talk about it. We can't not talk about it. The stigma of mental illness being considered by some historically as a moral failing. It's just not accurate and not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here to sort of just get us talking about it, get us talking about the illness, but also the recovery mm-hmm. that's possible and the recovery that's around us, whether it's self-help or professional treatment or a combination of those. It's available. We're always looking for more support for people who are struggling with this brain disease, but That's what we're here for. I'm also here to plug Laura's spot in a couple of weeks for the September 16th Dutchman's Landing Out of Darkness Walk to Prevent Suicide.
Yep, we'll be there.
It is on the Greene County side this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're here. You know, we just want to get that word out.
Why do you think there's a stigma around mental health? Because, like, when you think of somebody with mental health, like, the word that always comes to mind is, like, well, that person's crazy. Mm-hmm. Why do you think, like, it's not something that's, you know, there's more empathy for?
I'm not sure we have an answer for that. I can tell you what my belief is. And, you know, what do we think about people who are heavy? Do we think of them as lazy?
Sometimes. When some people say, like, those Americans, they're fat, lazy. Like,
well,
that's, you know.
I'm not sure the parallels are exact, but how did we come up with this notion that if somebody is depressed, that it's a sign that they don't have good character?
Or they're weak.
Or they're weak. That's right.
What would you say to those people?
Or they're possessed by the devil.
That's a deeper
I'm not making
one.
This up. I know.
But what do you say to that?
We joke about it, and it is funny on some level, but on some another level, it's not really funny because it's a very common disorder. It's one of the most common disorders. So we don't think of diabetes that way.
No.
I don't know how it originated, but we have to stop it. We have to take a hold of it and be able to talk about it and be comfortable with all of our us being prone to depression and anxiety and darkness.
Yeah.
And it's more of a level of extent that differentiates us one from another rather than, you know, I've got it, you don't.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And we appreciate your opinion. One quick question, because I know J-Mac has one and Ray has a question as well, but what's the difference between someone just being sad and someone being depressed?
All of us get sad from time to time. It would be a problem if we didn't react with sadness to grief and trauma. Mm-hmm. That would be a sign of illness.
Yeah.
As that sadness continues and deepens and it spirals down, it can transform into something that is clinically diagnosable and is considered, you know, we don't know. The science behind this is very early on still, but is considered a condition that is just very different than just sadness.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you know about the show 13 Reasons Why?
Yes.
What is your 13 Reasons Why?
Mm-hmm.
What is your opinion on how they went about showing her committing suicide and what's your opinion on the show?
On the one hand, we're talking about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
We need to talk about the thoughts of suicide that we all have to one extent or another. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe there are some people on this planet who have never had dark thoughts like that. But we have to talk about that.
We do.
So on the one hand, you've brought it up, and we're getting to talk about it.
Right.
On the other hand, it romanticizes suicide.
Yeah.
And it conveys a message that is an acceptable solution a temporary problem.
Mm-hmm.
For suicide being a sign of depression is just yet another way that we stay in our head and we spiral down, we get isolated, we have very dark thoughts that are not confirmed, that aren't rational.
Right.
And they're temporary, and hope is not accessible in that place.
Right.
But if we get out of that place, and we can get help to get out of that place, hope is available, and, you know, life keeps changing.
That's
so my thoughts about it, I'm glad it's getting us all to talk about it, because it's all over everywhere.
That's true.
I'm glad it's getting us to talk about it everywhere. I don't think it's a show that children should watch without parents in the room.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, I'm no expert on the show by any means, but, my understanding is that it romanticizes these solutions that are permanent solutions to a temporary problem.
Hold on, Ray. I know that, and J-Mac, I know that when Laura comes in, that she's going to really, we're going to talk deeply about that show. That's kind of Laura's forte, and I know she wants to talk about that. All right, go ahead, Ray.
I wanted to ask, I mean, being that we're kind of on the subject of suicide at the moment, I wanted to ask how, if you've experienced someone who's had thoughts at a previous time of suicide, and they no longer have those thoughts, I know it's still something to a degree that you still want to converse about, especially if it's a loved one. How do you go about doing that when they've already basically expressed that they no longer have those thoughts? Or is it possible for those thoughts to completely go away?
I'm sure it's possible for those thoughts to go away. And many of us are able to recover and pull ourselves with the help of others out of that. But I don't think that conversation is a conversation we should be afraid to have with one another. If I have a history of attempting suicide or telling you about thoughts of suicide that I have, and you're my friend, I want you in a year to say, "How you doing? What's going on with you? You feeling more hopeful? You know, I noticed you weren't at such and such last week. I don't mean to pry, but I just care about you." You know, can we have that conversation? We need to keep having that conversation with one another, whether it's a personal level, and that's far and away where the conversation mostly happens, or a professional level. Have an honest conversation about thoughts about that.
Okay, I have a question for Annabelle, because you're not going to sit there and not do anything.
Nah, I was just about to get to it, too.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you some questions about some of the services that you guys provide. And how you would deal with them. One of the services that you guys provide is dealing with anxiety. Like, how would you deal with something with someone that might be dealing with anxiety? On both ends, as the person that's dealing with it, and as the person's mate, brother, sister, who has to deal with the person that's actually dealing with it.
Well, my position as a peer specialist, and I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, is to have your own personal experience with either substance abuse or mental illness. In my case, it's both. So I can relate, in fact, with everything that is being discussed. So, like, for example, my sister tried to commit suicide. I'm the one who was able to save her at the moment, you know, by calling the police and everything. Mental illnesses in my family. My mother was in and out of mental hospital my whole entire life, sometimes for at least like a whole year at a time. And so for me, is I experienced a lot of, you know, early childhood trauma. Eventually I had to deal with substance abuse, and I got clean and sober, you know, enter a program. And then eventually, I was still dealing with my mental illness, which I didn't know what it was. It was not being diagnosed. So that reminded me that I had no control over my emotions, you know, the highs and the lows. And as far as stigma, for me, it was very much people did not understand. You know, they expected me to have control over this. And I, the first one who would, you know, beat myself up saying, how can I not control that? What's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. Eventually, I was diagnosed, and I started some medication. And for me, it's been a miracle. It's really, really changed my life. But I also am very active with getting better. I am long-term in recovery and long-term with therapists and support groups. So you have to be willing to accept, first of all, that you can't do it alone. You have to reach out for help. It's a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. You have to be patient, and you have to also have that faith and that hope that your life can be restored. So, again, it doesn't matter if you have committed suicide or if you had, you know, years of substance abuse or years of, you know, battling a mental illness. It is a possibility. You can, you know, you can live a full life. And so my role at the mental health center is that when a person first come in and they are broken, you know, they might be broken, you know, emotionally, mentally, but they, first of all, I want to say that I praise them because they made that first step in actually reaching out for help. And that's huge, because we are here to tell them, I'm here. I'm the first one that they see coming in a way. I'm doing the open access so they can come in, you know, every morning from Monday through Thursday, 9 to 11, and just, you know, they don't need to call. They can just come, and they can sit down with me, and I can start, you know, the process. So they know that they're not alone. They know, they see someone is here who now live a life in, you know, recovery from mental illness or substance abuse. It doesn't matter. And they know that there is hope. And my role also, I want to say, is to be the bridge, because very often people are scared of institution and, yeah, and doctors. And I want to say I've been so privileged to that they opened their door for me to work there. And I really tell my client, look, you they are wonderful, and they're here to help you. And no matter how long it takes, and we also have a lot of resources, you know, for the community. Like I said, support group or whatever. There is an amazing collaboration in this, I feel, in this community between, let's say, the Mental Health Center and the Mental Health Association, and as well as Twin Counties for the substance abuse, and even with the police. Like, they have a helpline where you can volunteer. Like, everybody now is coming together, and you have the Apogee Center for peer, you know, it's all peer services. And so they come in, and they think they might come for just, you know, please help me, and then you can gain an entire community and of support. So that's pretty much.
I got to give.
Yeah,
I got to
give you the clap.
Nothing personal, Kenneth Michael. And no, it is personal, because you did a great job by bringing someone here.
Yeah.
And that was phenomenal. I'm gonna give a clap. Yeah, I want to give. I want to give you the applause so bad, because.
But
that
you
was,
gotta get. The,
I'm gonna give the, you the company clap. That's what I'm gonna give. Just
call me Annabella. I want to say, you guys did a good job in hiring her.
Yeah.
Because she just made me feel welcome, and I'm not even there.
Right? I was saying the same thing. Saying,
I'm like, man, I really feel like I need to open up right now.
That's what I was for, right?
Like, man.
I want to talk about, and thank you so much. I want to say your name right. I don't want to say it wrong, because it is you're doing a great job. Annabelle, right?
Yes.
I want to talk about, maybe you talked about support groups, but, and also to you, to Michael, is there a support group for the support group? Meaning, if my spouse is dealing with some kind of mental disorder, and his spouse, is there a group for us that we can go and talk to each other and say, hey, you know, most of the time, especially when you're dealing with people that might be bipolar, there's going to be times when they're really, really high, and you're going to be like, but then the next day it might crash down. So enjoy the highness, but prepare for what's going to happen after that. And if you don't go through that, you won't know. So it'll be like, wait a minute, you were just the nicest person in the whole entire world yesterday. Now I'm the devil. You know what I mean? So is there a group for people that spouses or loved ones that they can talk to and maybe figure things out?
Be better supporters.
That is such a good question. I'm hoping Michael has an answer. Really, I just...
Yes. Would you like to know more?
Yes please.
The more you know.
We are very fortunate that I think 4 or 5 years ago, the National Alliance for Mentally Ill formed NAMI. Incorporated formed a Columbia County, Greene County chapter. So they have meetings on a regular basis. I think they're often at Solaris. I'm not sure I can get you that information. It's, I think, also on our website.
Okay.
But National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, our local chapter, that's exactly what they do. It's a support group for families, friends, loved ones, working through what their loved ones are working through. It's that's a great question.
I come up with a couple of them every now and then.
That's a great question. I actually didn't know that name. A listener, Amber Klein, who works with you guys, just told me to tell Annabelle that she's doing a fantastic job. And she said the name, so I had to fill it in and act like I knew.
Wait a minute. Yo, Slay, I, when you said it, I looked at you like, damn.
Yeah, I did too.
Seriously, like, you weren't the only one. When he said it, I'm like,
he's good.
After I threw it out there like I knew it.
And you almost got a point for it too.
He did the manly thing. He got credit where it was due.
So, people always say that you can't prevent mental health problems or conditions. What can you do as far as self-care? If you're someone who, you know, there's a lot of people nowadays who they don't want to take medicine, so they don't believe in medication. What kind of self-care is out there for people dealing with, like, say, depression?
Another great question. So
we are the two-time award-winning Drive Time.
Yes. And yet you still see me as a clothing designer.
Oh, my goodness.
Eating well, exercise, sleep, friends come to mind. It's not rocket science. It's difficult for all of us to do that because we're busy or we get distracted or we don't have the energy. But maintaining habits, and Annabelle just said therapy. It's a combination of things. But if you're talking about prevention, those are some things. Being connected with other people is as difficult as other people can be. Yeah. Not so much me, but probably you.
Definitely a little bit.
It's really important. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we were meant to live alone. And connecting with other people is really an important way to prevent serious symptoms becoming something more serious. Catching it early. Mm-hmm. What do you have to say?
I also want to say to maybe not necessarily be so afraid of medication. And sometimes it's only for a while. Sometimes it's just you need it for a certain period of time. That doesn't mean you have to be on medication for the rest of your life either. Mm-hmm. I think there is also a lot of stigma about medication, and it is just not as I think it's not what we think it is. It doesn't change who you are, you know? I mean, again, that's another subject. I mean, you can work with your doctor. You can work with a therapist if, you know, medication, you don't find it, you know, you don't adjust to it. So they'll work with you. So, but
I would also say that another prevention method is for us to use a vocabulary to express what is we're feeling. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what anxiety was. I thought I was the only person in the world that felt whatever that feelings were, the chest pounding. Yeah. Or mm-hmm. Once we get a vocabulary and we can talk about it, we can identify it and talk about it with others, we realize that we're not alone in this, that the other people are experiencing something very similar, if not exactly the same. Not necessarily at the same time, necessarily the same degree, not necessarily the same triggers, but talking about it, having a vocabulary, that emotional vocabulary is wonderful.
I'm actually going to ask this question just more so to drive the point that you just made a second ago. How important, and please express in, you know, a little more detail, how important it is for people to be proactive and be able to look at their friends and loved ones and say, okay, I noticed you just went through a traumatizing situation, or you just went through something that was, you know, mind-boggling, to be able to say, look, what you're going through, here, I'm here, let's talk about it. Can you express the importance of that?
We are one another's support system. Again, if we're around people, and that's critical, those who love us hopefully will be attuned to our symptoms and notice changes in our behavior and ask us about it. Not judge us about it, but ask us about it, and we'll do the same for them. Being in a group like that and having a safe place to talk about it is critical. Mm-hmm. It's as you say, I don't know how to emphasize that more anymore, because that's where we live our lives. We live our lives around our family and friends. We don't live our lives around professionals and doctors. We must rely on one another, those around us, to help us and to help them. And yeah, we can't be all things to all people. So, you know, I'm not to my friend going to say, I'll provide therapy to you. But I'm going to have the conversation, and if you need help finding someone, maybe I could help you find someone.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you go about it if one of your friends, you can tell something's not right, and you continuously, you know, let them know that you're there, and if they need to talk, you're a listening ear. How do you go about it if they don't if they don't want to talk about it, they keep saying they're fine, but you know they're not. Like, how do you get them help? Like, how do you help them?
Well, I do want to say one thing. The person has to want it, has to listen, has to do their part. You can't receive healing if you don't take an active role in your own. You have to have that willingness, and it takes a lot. It's like a war, you know, because mental illness is like the battle is in your mind. Mm-hmm. And right. So it's going to take a lot of effort. And so equally as you can help someone, the person has to also make the effort and be willing to meet you halfway, because you can force them to go and receive treatment. But if at the end of the day, if they haven't made that decision right. for themselves, so I think they have to play a really important role in their own recovery.
I think you've heard the phrase, perhaps, that recovery is not for those who need it. It's for those who want it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that can be applied more generally. And that's a harsh thing to say. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if denial and is one of the primary symptoms, and this the way out of this is to get help through that. It's a tough passage. That first step in the door is huge.
Mm-hmm. My question is, with labels and the way systems work, or the way that the rumor of systems work, let's say someone decides that they're going to come in and they're going to tell you, and they're going to be 100% honest with you, and they say, listen, I feel this way and I'm feeling that way. And then you, next thing you know, they're in a hospital. And that's not what they want. They want help, but they don't want to be in a hospital. You understand? Because that's going to take them away from their family. Mm-hmm. So is there any kind of prevention? I mean, as a peer specialist, is there anything that you might do? You know, is there a questionnaire they fill out to figure out whether or not they're a danger to themselves? And will that automatically send them into like a 24 or 48 hour, you know, stay or something like that? Or is it on an individual basis, like you come in, you talk to the person, and you say...
Well, there is a process, especially if you, you know, if I ask you, you know, if you are a danger to yourself or to other, there is definitely, I would have to report this immediately. Mm-hmm. That's one case that I can, mm-hmm. you know, that I can think of. Ultimately is to save the person, you know, from themselves or for causing harm. Maybe Michael can tell you the next step after that, because I'm not sure. Yes?
I want to stop you right there. One thing that you said was the biggest step that a person can make is actually coming in. When they make that big step, and then if you ask them, are they a danger to themselves, they might answer, wow, I made it in here, so right now I'm not. There has been times when I have been, but I'm really trying to make this step. Will you take that as the individual thing, or is there a, like, you know, a questionnaire? Did they answer this? Okay, you go to 48 hour.
It's not all black and white like that at all. Matter of fact, they are amazing. Everybody that works, you know, at the mental health center is amazing, and they know exactly what they're going to do, and they really take the person into consideration, where they're at, where they were, you know, before. So it's not like that. They don't have to be afraid of anything like that, for sure.
If someone comes in and they're feeling out of control, the last thing they want it to be is have control taken over completely from them. We understand that. Right. That is the last thing. We want to join with people in creating their own pathway to recovery. It's only in very rare circumstances where there's imminent risk, not mm-hmm. yesterday, not, you know, a possibility, imminent risk of harm to self or others, where an assessment for a hospitalization would happen. That is very rare. Okay.
I want to know how would a person, and even maybe some of the people around them are not informed enough, how would they be able to determine that they have mental illness? Because I know growing up, anytime I thought mental illness, I thought somebody with like autism, or I thought somebody with some level of developmental disability. We're talking mental health. How would a person know enough to even know that they might need to seek the help of a professional?
That's a tough question to answer, but it has to do with functioning. That's what I think about it anyway. if you're having trouble, if I'm having trouble getting out of bed, going to work, having relationships, intimate relationships of any length, having challenges getting through life, that challenge with your functioning, with one's functioning, is a sign, is maybe a sign that there's a mental illness that's creating a barrier, maybe one of the barriers to succeeding in that and to functioning at someone's highest level that they're capable of. So I think part of it comes down to being able to acknowledge that one's functioning is not adequate, is not the best they can do.
Yeah, I want to piggyback Ray's question and just go through some of the basically programs that you guys have, and if you can explain them. Like, for one, you have life transitions. What can you explain, like, what it would look like for, like, a life when you have life transition there? Like, what does that mean?
One of the most vulnerable times for all of us is when we experience this changes in identity, changes in our medical condition, changes in our housing, changes in our income.
Mm-hmm.
You think about somebody who, let's say, is retiring or got laid off or just divorced or any circumstances where there's a major change in identity as mm-hmm. a father, as a brother, as a sister, mother, husband, whatever, employee, that transition takes comes with a lot of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us need support for that. That's an example I can think of.
No, that's a great transition, too, because another one of your services is stress-related problems. What would constitute, you know, under the category of a stress-related problem?
I think I would talk about, let's say, divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a custody issue. Sudden unemployment or any one of those things. These are the most stressful things we can experience.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it may be an upcoming marriage.
Yeah.
It's not always a negative thing, but mm-hmm. but we are distressed by certain events like that, positive or negative.
Now, speaking about stress, is there anything that's too small? Because you know how some people base their life on someone else's life or someone else's situation. They may say, like, that's a small issue. Like, that's nothing to stress over. Mm-hmm. Like, can you speak to that some? Go ahead, and if you want, take it away.
Okay. I just want, there is nothing too small to just come mm-hmm. and, you know, receive help, even if it's just, you know, like a little time, like it might be just a month to help you go through a very specific situation. So,
because mm-hmm. I'm just saying that for someone who maybe is listening, who may be thinking like my issue is not big enough. Like I didn't go through a divorce.
No.
I didn't, you know, have any type of childhood trauma, but they may have had a stressor where they can't focus through their day.
Because sometimes if you wait too, you know, it might get to be a bigger issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think a lot of people think that way. They just don't want to be vulnerable and expose, you know, whatever they're feeling. But I think this, you know, mental health awareness, this is all about that. It's like we have to be able to talk about it and feel safe.
Who am I to tell you that your stress is not big enough to warrant
you're
support?
You're Kenneth Cole.
You are Kenneth Cole. My question is, I'm going to gear towards race and gender. And I want to dive into black men or people of color, the men, especially with something like mental health. Let's say something like depression. Depending on how you grew up and what kind of family structures you grew up in, you know, as a young black kid, you were pretty much considered the man of the house,
mm-hmm.
which meant you had to put a lot on your shoulders. You had to be, number one, mentally strong. Some things you just got to shake off. Mm-hmm. Number two, you have to realize that people live to die. You mm-hmm. got to shake that off, too. So with those kind of things, and I'm not saying everybody, but I'm just saying, but with those kind of things happening, I would guess that there would be a pattern of some kind of mental disturbance there. because you're not able to have emotions and you're not able to do these things. Mm-hmm. But how if you were told your whole entire life that you have to be a man, you have to be strong, do you make a step and say, hey, I need help, and it's not financial and it's not physical, you know, it's mental. Like, what do you suggest as a man? And the only reason I say black men, because one, we have a lot of listeners, but this is a topic that the black community refuse to take seriously, or they'll just joke with it. Oh, she's 7'11", she's 7'30". You know, no, she has a problem. Like, it's a real problem. We need to address it like it's a real problem. So it would have to probably start with the men, because most men, I mean, me myself, I don't think I've ever been depressed, but I don't know the difference, because I just feel the same way. I'm always, like, I know that I've been in a funk. I shook it. Like, I tell myself, you have no choice. If you don't shape up and get right, everything's going to fall down. And then I'm really going to be depressed. You understand? So, I mean, that's just me. That's now, I've been fortunate enough to have a strong backing so that I haven't got to that point. But it could happen. Yeah. And then what?
Mental illness does not discriminate based on gender or race. There are some statistics that, you know, show some minor swings this way or that, but that's a huge problem. And if one is parentified as a child, that it predisposes someone to minimizing stress, and you know, can come up to be an issue later in life. I am concerned that we are always trying to reduce barriers and reduce stigma. And I am, our mental health center has a census, let's say, of 1,500 folks. We do not serve the black community. I don't know why people do not use labels. Us. Are we stigma. Not? Culturally competent. I don't know why, but that concerns me.
I tell you, Michael, I tell you what it is. It has nothing to do with you. It's the fear of someone seeing a weakness.
Yeah.
I was just about to piggyback that. Just like and I can even contest to that. Like, I grew up around people. I wasn't so much affected by that same mindset because, you know, my pop kind of instilled things in us and wanted me and my brothers to be open. But I grew up around guys who, that was exactly how they were brought up. You're the man of the house. You got to shape up, get it right, and you got to be strong for the family. They can't see you break. So if you feel like you might be going through something, you got to brush that off, because tomorrow's another day and you got things to take care of. Yeah. And if you don't take care of it, then it's not going to get taken care of, and the family's going to suffer because you weren't strong enough to get through it.
And also, it's not talked about at an early age.
At all.
So when you're introduced to any type of mental health suggestion or treatment in the black community, it's usually during the court process.
Yep.
So by then, you're not really taking it serious. It's just like, I got to do this for court, so I'm going to go talk to this lady, let her know I'm not crazy, and then I'm out of here. But like, that whole time growing up, you know, you've grew up with, you know, a big hole in your heart where you experience death. You experience, you know, people in and out of your life, going to jail and different things like that. And you become hard to it. So when someone passes away or when somebody goes to jail or different things happen that, you know, are big life transitions, it doesn't really affect you the same. So you never get that treatment. And then you teach the next generation the same thing.
And you teach it to them sooner. Because, you know, everybody that goes through it has a hiccup, you know, and you're like, oh, man, I cried yesterday. And you're like, what?
Like, you cried.
You cried?
Like,
yo, somebody hit you?
Like, it's weird if I think of, like, someone else, like one of my friends crying, like.
I'll be like, somebody better have hit him or something. It better be somebody, like really close.
You sure it's not allergies? Like, like, when I just think of myself personally, like, it has to be something very traumatic for me to cry. Like, it has to be something, like, deep.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't even feel like I know how to cry. I feel like I would just stop because I'd be like, all right, this is weird. I'm not going to do this.
But you know what the scary part about it is? I don't cry, but I'm afraid if I do cry, that everybody around me just better move away because something really bad is going to happen. Like, I'm going to be mad at myself that I allowed myself to cry, so now I gotta seek vengeance on the person or the people that made me cry.
So we want emotional regulation. We want a mid-ground. Yeah. We want a mid-ground. If hold we bind it all up and hold on to it, it's going to come out one way or another.
I want to get Annabelle on the mic because you look like you just wanted to dive in there. I thought you were going to tackle Michael off the stool. Like, I just want you to touch on some of this.
I think things starting to change, though. I do see a lot of men, coming in. They're going through something, and maybe because of a relationship, but no matter which race, and that's something I don't think we would have seen even a few years ago, 20 years ago. So I do believe it's starting to change. And if we continue just bringing awareness and sometimes, you know, for men, like you said, it's a lot of responsibility and pride, you know, get in the way, pride before the fall.
And, you know, so you don't want to be vulnerable.
Exactly. But you guys are talking about it, and your generation is definitely just, you know, changing things. And I bet you in 20 years, this will be a whole different story even. So I'm pretty encouraged by what's happening, what I see.
Mm-hmm.
And regarding crying and not crying, a lot of boys are taught to not cry. Like, if they get emotional, like, even if they're, like, 5 years old and they fall and scrape their knee, they're told, oh, don't cry like a girl. Don't look like a girl. Don't look, you know, weak or whatever. And I think that's a big part of why a lot of people don't think anything's wrong. Like, the minute they think, okay, well, it's not that serious, you know, it'll pass, tomorrow's a new day. They put that aside, and then it just keeps piling on and piling on and piling on, and by the time they want to let everything out, there's no way to get everything out. Like, it just comes out as a different, as something they don't even know what to do with. So, yeah, I think hopefully it does change, because everyone needs to be able to be aware of how they're feeling and how to get help if they need it.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Okay. Want to wrap up?
Yeah.
Anything in closing?
Nah, I honestly no.
I just want to say thank you so much, you guys. You make me feel so comfortable.
We gotta thank you guys.
Yeah, you
have to come back for jamming next time.
Hold on, let me give you guys a clap. Don't leave, Michael, because I want you guys to give out all your information again, and then maybe if you can in closing, like, what's the best way for us to be examples for our community? And to help with conversation, because basically that's what this was really about. We wanted to have the conversation.
Yeah.
We wanted to say, hey, we're the radio guys, and we're not afraid, you know, to talk about it. And so that even if one person, you know, hears it, you know, we did what we set out to do. You know, so let me give you the clap first, because you guys were awesome.
And also in closing, and I'd rather Annabelle do this. If you could just give a message to anybody who may be listening in who is wondering if they should seek help or not.
Well, that's easy. The answer is yes. And I just want to... My message is that for every, you know, body that knows someone who's suffering, I just want to say every human being is, you know, has a soul, has a spirit, has hope for a better future. So I think for me, the most important is to, you know, if you see someone, a homeless or someone just coming out of jail or anything, I just treat them as a human being. Treat them as, you know, one-on-one with respect and dignity. And I think we can go a long way just knowing that and just encouraging. I'm encouraging everyone who has, you know, any need for support to come and see us. Just again, we don't even have to make a phone call. You can just Monday through Friday, every morning from 9 to 11.
What's
just
the number?
Yeah.
828-9446, 825 Columbia Street, Hudson.
But if you don't remember, yes, here we go. Thank you. Please come and see us. Just don't ever give up. That's all.
You guys are great. You let us talk about men crying on Drive Time. Yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is modeling. Right. That's modeling. We have it.
No.
It's allergies.
It's allergies. Annabelle, don't do it. And you're messing up my reputation, Annabelle. Don't do it.
I really appreciate. I appreciate your willingness to talk about a subject that's tough to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And let's do more of it.
Okay.
And you guys got anything coming up that people should know about? Any events or any new services or programs?
Oh, I would encourage you to check out the Youth Clubhouse that just opened up. The Mental Health Association, Kai Hillman, has started a clubhouse for youth up on the top of Columbia. I forget the address. But that's open, I think, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays in the afternoon. Gosh, I'm not prepared. But that's a great program that we just started up. The Mental Health Association also has just gotten funding to expand their mobile crisis assessment team. So they will be operating 14 hours a day instead of 8 hours a day, 365 days a year. And that's for Columbia and Greene County.
Right.
They're there for us, and they're just a wonderful asset for us to have. The event that I want to remind people about is not for a while, but September 16th is coming up. We'll send out all sorts of reminders and encourage people to register for the Out of Darkness Walk to Prevent Suicide. Dutchman's Landing, Saturday morning, the 16th of September.
Thank you.
Yep, we will be there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We're going to go to a quick break. You guys don't go anywhere. We have to take pictures because this is a big interview for us. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, both of you. Let me give you the clap on the way out. And we'll be right back to talk about Mother's Day.